You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to the Kimberly Batchelor Davis Show. I am so excited. This is our first episode, and today in studio we have Heather Buchanan of AUX Media, and we're going to be talking about embracing our creativity and being our authentic self. Welcome, Heather. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Kim. Thank you so very much for having me here today.
I'm so glad you're here, and you're going to be our co-host, so I'm super excited about that.
Oh, yes, yes.
So I want to jump right into our topic. How did you know or did you discover your talent?
This is a great question. I would say it started when I was pretty young, pretty much fifth grade, actually.
Really?
Yeah. A group of my friends and I, suddenly had this great idea. Let's work on a soap opera. Let's write a soap opera. And, it was really, really fun and exciting for me. I had never done anything like that, and I just loved the prospect of it. And over time, you know, my friends were amazed at, you know, mm-hmm. the stories that I was mm-hmm. writing and the drama and everything, and I was excited about it. And, you know, I kept writing and writing and writing, and I felt so much joy and excitement to share with them. And that's when I kind of started realizing what it could be like to be a writer, mm-hmm. Because you're impacting other people. You're making them feel things. It's a powerful feeling.
It is.
When you know, and I was kind of a shy person, you know, and this was so exciting for me. But over time, as, you know, we mm-hmm. were kids, mm-hmm. things changed. They moved on.
Yes.
They got into boys mm-hmm. and, you know, fashion and everything else. And they stopped doing anything and stopped contributing. And I was the only one writing. Wow. Over time, you know, we weren't even hardly hanging out together anymore. Mm-hmm. But a funny thing happened to me. I kept writing and I just found myself not able to stop writing. But unfortunately I started feeling bad about it because I started thinking, what is something's wrong with me? Because I want to keep writing and nobody's here to read it, but I'm still writing and I can't stop. So.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think that's when I first started really realizing. And my mother was a voracious reader. Oh, she read everything mm-hmm. and she used to crack our family up. She would read books about the pygmies. I don't know what she was fascinated with the pygmies, but she would read the gamut. She would read medical books. She would read, of course, she loved novels. Mm-hmm. I was so proud to be able to bring her a copy of Tina Turner's memoir.
Wow.
Tina. Oh, she was so thrilled and happy. And my first job was in a library too. So I love books.
Excellent.
Overall. But, as a writer, I think I started growing stronger. Something told me don't stop. Mm-hmm. And in sixth grade, I started writing short stories. And in English class, the teacher pulled me aside and said, "You must have copied this." And she was so mean and I felt so bad and I was bewildered.
That's terrible.
Oh my goodness. And you know, I was an honor student, but I was very shy. So I wasn't like, you know, known around everywhere and, in the school. But, I told my mother what happened. Oh, my mother was furious and she came up and she set that teacher straight. And I'm so grateful that my mother did that, because what if that would have stopped me?
Mm-hmm.
So I continued writing after that. And then in seventh grade, I got into poetry and I loved doing that. And by eighth grade, I got intrigued by, we were assigned these research writing assignments and papers, mm-hmm. and I did those and felt so good and got A+ on every paper, and mm-hmm. the teacher were just mm-hmm. looking at me. And so anyway, long story short, it was when I was pretty young, and I just never stopped from then.
That's an amazing story. I want to go back to two things. So one, what was your mom's favorite book or a book that you remember that you, when you think about
question.
It, you associate with your mom?
The Tina Turner memoir.
Okay.
Tina. Probably two, because I picked it out special for her. I had just gotten a job at a local library.
Mm-hmm.
I was about 16. That was my first job. And when it came out, I knew how much she loved Tina Turner.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
yeah, I would say that. And then the Pygmies book.
Well, pygmies are cool, because I remember studying and I was like, there's a group of people called pygmies,
yes.
and they're short,
yeah,
like naturally short. Like, wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it was such a different way of life. So that's my story. Now, what's your story? How
well, OK,
know?
So before okay. before sure. we get to my story, mm-hmm. I want to go back to the other point that I wanted to bring up.
Mm-hmm.
You said that in the sixth grade, this teacher accused you of copying
yeah.
something as if you weren't capable of creating it.
Well, and I'm, you know, now that you're mentioning it, also at the time I was a part of the children that were bused to white schools, black children.
Oh, I was part of that.
I won't say what decade, but
I know
we were bused, and that was a whole nother thing. We were so isolated and felt out of place.
Mm-hmm.
And this, well, I hate to say it, this teacher was an older white woman, and she just could not conceive of it, you know. But I subsequently did all my other assignments, and I was one of the top students in the school. I scored off of just about every scoring and testing thing they had,
but they
didn't know what to do with me.
Exactly. And that's one of the things I want to bring up. I think a lot of us, because that's part of my story, not necessarily that, but that feeling of inadequacy, feeling that you're not good enough, feeling that you aren't talented, that this isn't something that you should do, but that it constantly calls you.
Yes.
And you cannot explain it.
Yes.
So my story is a little similar to yours, Heather. I grew up with girlfriends, and we would do a couple things. We would play with Barbie dolls on my porch, on my front porch, and we'd write stories. And my girlfriend across the street, who just very, very smart, graduated top of her class from Yale, graduated top of her class from Renaissance High School, was the writer. She was you. She was the one that could take an ordinary story, like about a dog crossing the street, and we'd be like, well, what happened when he crossed the street? Like, we, and I longed to write stories like that. And so as a little girl, I would write stories, and everybody would say, oh, your story is good, but we would read her story, and I'd be like, but it's not her story. And so, like you said, you grow up, different interests. I was a late bloomer, so my friends were interested in boys, and they were going out and doing things, and I was just a bookworm. I always had my face in a book, and I was always reading and sort of immersing myself in a different world. And then I grew up, and I was like, okay, it's time to put childish things aside. Let's grow up, because we're supposed to make money, and we're supposed to be productive in some field. And I was one of those kids who got to college and didn't know what they wanted to do and changed my major a million times and fell in love with politics and thought that's what I wanted to do. And I've been very active and engaged in that for over 20 years. On September 11th, 2001, for me, the world changed. The Twin Towers, we all know, two planes crashed into the building. Another plane crashed into Pennsylvania. That was allegedly on the way to the White House. And I worked for a company in downtown Detroit on Jefferson, the One Woodward Building. My husband worked for GM. GM had just come into the Renaissance Center. And I remember, because my girlfriend that morning had said, hey, Kim, did you hear about the plane that hit the World Trade Towers? And I said, no, what are you talking about? I said, that's silly. And she said, well, turn it on the radio, because I heard something, but I couldn't figure it out. So it was one of those mornings where, you know, you're tired, you're at work, you don't feel like being there. So I went to the kitchen and get a cup of coffee and sit in front of the TV to see what was going on. Watching it. And then two other people came in and we saw the second plane hit. And a guy, there was a person on the right side of me and a person on the left side of me. And the person on the right side of me said, we're at war. And my body froze, because it was inconceivable to me to think we were at war. And so that whole day, I thought the world was ending, because I've always been a very imaginative person. So I was like, this is one of those sci-fi movies. We're going to all be outside and we're going to be walking around in rags and clothes, and the world is going to be ending, and we don't know what to do. And so I kept thinking, because we have been told they had grounded all the planes, but there were planes still in the air. And so the plane that was going towards the White House, they weren't sure where that plane was going. And so people were saying, it's coming to GM. They're going to crash into GM. And my building and my office face Jefferson Avenue, the Detroit River. And we have these huge tall windows. And our executive director called us. We were on the 17th, 18th, and 19th floors. It's a true story. Called us into the 19th conference room floor and pulled everybody in and said, we know that there's been a devastating attack on our country and that everybody is leaving, but we're going to stay at work and show an example that we're going to work and show the terrorists. And I thought, what the? Are you kidding me? GM has emptied out. The city of Detroit has emptied out. Downtown Detroit was complete gridlock. It was chaos. And it was an election day. That was the first term, I believe, Kwame Kilpatrick. Yes, Kwame Kilpatrick was running for mayor. Oh, and it was just insane because I went and voted that day. And it was crazy because my husband was like, you got to go vote. And I was like, I don't want to. I just want to go crawl in the corner someplace. But after going through all of that and listening to my executive director tell us that we couldn't go home and watching people stand in front of the windows looking for the plane, crying because they would not let us go home. They would not let us go home. And when I say this executive director called us into the conference room, he put on a cowboy. He's a white guy. Put on a cowboy hat. He interlaced his fingers into his khaki pants. And he had on khaki pants and like those little leathery shoes. And he was just like, we're not going to let the terrorists make us go home. And I thought, fool, I don't want to die here with y'all. I do not. And I was like, you all are some very fine people, but I want to be with my family if this is the end of the world.
Yes.
And so I remember going through all those emotions and praying to God, saying, God, if this is it, let me, you know, be able to be with my husband. I didn't have children at the time. Oh. It was just me and my husband. But I said, if you let us survive today, whatever I am supposed to do, I will do. And I was running from law school. My dad was an attorney and I did not want to go to law school. And so I was like, if you want me to go to law school, I will be the best dang on lawyer that you ever wanted me to be. I have a job right now and a title and I make more money than my age. Cause you know, people would always say you make your age. And I said, but whatever it is that I'm supposed to do, tell me and I will do it. A few weeks later, I did not, as I tell people, there was no booming voice from heaven that said, Kimberly, thou shalt. There was no burning bush moment. There was no dream. It was simply a story that popped into my head and it wouldn't leave me. And then I started working on it because it hit me and I'm like, God, are you telling me I'm supposed to write this story? So then I started writing like the little the creepy people in the horror movies where you were just like, I can't stop. And then I came to our group where we were all talking about writing, and I think I showcased it. And Karen, one of our mentors, said, you've got a great start. And I was like, but I wrote the whole story. She's like, no, you didn't. You wrote an outline. That's what you wrote. You got to do some more work. So I understand when you say about being encouraged and being called to do that. I went through a period where that was something I really enjoyed as a child. I love books. I'm one of those people who could get lost in a bookstore for hours and hours. Love the smell of books. Just there's something about a book. And exactly, the touch, the feel of the paper, and then going through life and not doing that. And now where I am the author of five books, I could not see myself not ever writing another word. It's painful. It is painful. So, wow, we have so much in common. This is funny. So I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about how, because this is always such a controversial topic, when we talk about support from family and friends, and I hear people who always talk about Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and how you're supposed to market yourself online. And, you know, you can look to your family and friends for support, but that's not where you're going to get it. What's your experience been?
It's been a mixed bag. I mean, my immediate family, most of them kind of have an idea of what I do. But there are other relatives who look at me like, oh, you don't have a job right now. So-and-so is hiring, you know, even at this stage in my life. Or when I was, I was a professor for a while and they'll say, oh, you're not teaching at the college anymore and different things like that, which I still do part time. But my main goal is writing and publishing. But I would say, you know, yes, support is very funny. But the other thing, social media is such a tricky thing. You can't gauge your value based on that. Those are algorithms telling you, you know, what's valuable and what's not. And it has. And for people of color, sorry, there is an inherent bias in social media, how we're presented and the things that we do, and things like that. But I would say overall, though, I've had some beautiful support, mainly from my father and my sister and my my brother-in-law, her husband. He really gets it. We have a lot of great times talking about books and writing and everything. And my father is also a very avid reader, and he loves all kinds of books. He's one of the most brilliant people I know.
Wow.
And I to, you know, even if I wasn't his daughter, I would just say that, you know. So I was so blessed to have two parents that appreciated arts and culture and books and music. We won't even get started on that. But yeah, support. But yeah, you know, you know, yeah, it's a weird thing, and it's hard to explain to relatives what you do. So yeah, so the holidays are kind of challenging every year because you're sitting there like, oh, they're gonna say,
what are you doing now?
What are you doing now? So what are you doing? Oh, well, I heard so and so was hiring, but you're telling them, hey, I'm putting on a writer's conference in you know in New York or something. And they're like, oh, that's interesting, and you know, and then but yeah, but I wouldn't and then like on social media, if you promote, you can't promote everything on there because don't feel that pressure to be forced to just try chase. I'm not a person that does a lot of chasing, you know.
I noticed that about you. I admire that about you.
I say, this is who I am, this is what I stand for, and here it is, you know. Because you can't chase gimmicks, because gimmicks, they always peter out eventually.
So say that again.
You can't chase gimmicks.
You have to be authentic.
Yes.
And then be the real you.
Yes. Yes.
That's awesome. So one of my experiences, and you know this because we talked about it, because it was a little bit of my frustration when I did my first play, I had a couple people who I was really excited to share with, and they were like, so when are you doing your little play? And I was like, it's not a little play. It's a big production.
Yes.
Like, we're doing 3 days of performances. I've got to coordinate with a venue.
A big production, and it was so very well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very professional.
But people don't get that.
No.
And,
no.
You know, when I tell people about the money, amount of money that I spent for that, they look at me and they go, what?
Yeah, think,
but you don't have a job.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
This is my job.
Yeah,
this is my job. I had dinner with some good friends last night, and my girlfriend, she cracked on me and she says, well, what else are you doing? Because, you know, writing is not a job. I said, but writing is a job.
And she's, don't understand.
And I have like other things going on. I do media, I do events, I do speaking engagements and different things like that. But the thing about it is, when you're an artist, if you don't believe in yourself, all the time, you have to keep yourself motivated. One of my favorite scriptures that I turn to for keeping myself motivated is Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. They are plans of peace and not a disaster, to give you a future filled with hope.
Yes.
And one of the things that I admire about you, Heather, is whenever I come to you and I share an idea, you always say, Let's do it. What can I do to help you? You always cheer me on. And whenever you do something, I try to do the same thing for you. And so when you find like-minded people, it's always a good thing.
It really is.
It is.
That's what's going to carry you. They said, find your tribe. They're the ones who are going to love you. And then I just heard a funny one recently about something about your prophet is not really appreciated in his hometown.
That's right.
Yeah, I just learned. And I said, that's very true. I notice, you know, if I go further out and expand out, I get more, you know, and you come back home and then you're saying, okay, well, why can't it? I can't replicate that here. But there are times when things go better than, you know, other times locally. But yeah, and so it's kind of back to family and friends. Sometimes they can't visualize. You kind of can't be around folks that can't visualize beyond whatever's right in front of them, because they can't see the bigger picture.
All right. So we're going to continue on, but we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with the Kimberly Batchelor Davis Show. Welcome back to the Kimberly Batchelor Davis Show. And today we are talking with Heather Buchanan about embracing your creativity and being your authentic self. So Heather, we've been talking a lot about what got us started writing, what keeps us going. Tell us some of the things that you are involved in right now, because you're busy.
People tell me that. Yeah, I guess a little busy. I like to stay involved in things. I love projects. I love working with other people and, like you said, like-minded people. I guess an umbrella term would be I'm like an arts and business type of consultant. So I do events. I'm a publisher and I'm a producer. I work on film projects.
How many film projects do you have?
Right now, about 3 or 4.
Yeah.
So we're very excited about that. Part of that became an offshoot from the publishing. I had a lot of great stories that I said, hey, these would be really great on the screen, you know, and it's a way to really expand and get the story out there to the larger audience, you know, and everything. So, yeah. So I have a publishing company, Aquarius Press. It's been in Detroit for over 20 years.
Okay.
And we publish a lot of the local authors and national authors.
Wow.
And I have a subdivision of that called Willow Books, and it publishes many of the nation's top poets and writers of color. So I'm very proud about that. And then I have recently opened a studio in Techtown, Detroit, where we work on film-related projects. And I've had you in, and we've done workshops. We've done writing sessions, and we have a lot of great things in store.
Excellent, excellent. So let's talk about your movie projects, because, you know, those are, I'm very excited about. Can you talk about the first two that you did and your experience with that?
Oh, yeah. The first one was for this film that's coming very soon, that they're working in post-production right now. It's called Solomon, and it is a beautiful, beautiful drama written by a Michigander. And, oh my goodness, the name went right out of my head. But, oh, J.B. Armstrong, really wonderful young man, and his producing partner, David, and David Hines Jr., and two wonderful, wonderful young men. I happened to meet them. They had a screening at right here in Royal Oak at the Main Art Theater, and where they talked about the film. Anyway, the film involves all local Detroit area actors and crew and Michigan crew, and we're very, very excited about that. That'll be coming out soon. But that was my first taste of, and I just loved it from then on.
Yes.
I got to be on set. That was my first time on a set, and I was just, it was crazy. I was like a bull in a china shop, but I had the best time. They were so kind to me, so I learned so much, and I said, you know what? I want to do this. It's so exciting and dynamic and immediate. Another project is a Detroit-based project. It's called When the Swan Sings on Hastings. Short film, and we filmed that in Hamtramck on location, featuring all Detroit actors, all Detroit crew.
Wow.
And we're in the finishing touches of that post-production, and we're looking to put that one into some festivals and things locally.
Exciting,
and
exciting.
Then, the newest project is a Flint project based on a true story of a black self-made millionaire who was in Flint, and he was one of the top employers in Flint. It still is.
Mm-hmm.
And his story is so amazing. He was a childhood friend of B.B. King in Memphis.
Wow.
He fled the Jim Crow South because of all the terrible things that happened, came up here and built a life for himself and became a multimillionaire.
Wow.
It is an exciting, riveting story. The book is called From Jim Crow to CEO, The Willie E. Artist Story. So some people are familiar with the artist family. Mm-hmm. So long story short, I'm producing a we're working on the script. We're going to have a film forum in Flint this June.
Excellent.
So details
excellent.
Will be coming.
Wow. See, you've got so much going on.
Thanks.
You were talking about being on set, and I remember when you invited me to come on set, and I was like, oh my gosh,
yes.
I'm on a movie set. And I saw the camera and the crew, and I listened for them to say action and do the cue cards, and I was like, wow, it's not what I thought to be on set. It's real work. It's real work.
It really is.
You know, people get mad at me because when I go to the movies, I have to watch the credits because I want to see everybody that worked on the film. And people are like, Kim, you don't know those people. I said, no. I said, but every one of those people touched some aspect of this film.
They worked so hard, and filmmakers appreciate that.
They do. They do, especially when you're talking about films with a lot of CGI and technology and computer animation. Mm-hmm. And you look at those big groups of people, and you're like, those are the people that did all the technology to make whatever come to life. And it for me, it's important, because I always tell people, one day, my name is going to be up on that screen.
It will. It will. I already know.
And you're going to be directing my first movie, Heather, so I'm excited about that.
It will be my honor.
So I want to talk a little bit about insight in this journey of being a writer, an author, for me a playwright, soon to be a filmmaker, so I can catch up with you. has been exciting, difficult, sad sometimes, trying, just the different things that you have to go through. Mm-hmm. And just wondering if you have any particular insight that you would share with anyone who's looking to get into writing, filmmaking, or being creative in general, what would you tell them?
I think I have a couple of things. First is visualize. See yourself doing it, it is possible.
Mm-hmm.
When you start, particularly, and I've heard this from someone else too in the film, particularly in the film business, once you start and commit and say, I'm going to do it,
yes,
things start coming together in the most amazing ways.
Mm-hmm.
It just, everything, the universe lines up for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I could say that for books too. Visualize. A lot of times with when I meet authors and I'm trying to decide, I wait until I see the vision of what I think the cover is going to look like, and
mm-hmm,
what I think the author, what their interaction with the world is going to be, how I introduce them. And it's all about visualization.
Absolutely.
And sticking to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other quick insight is a thing that my father always tells me is hard work pays off.
Yes.
It really does.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be committed and you have to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Work
mm-hmm
every day on whatever it is you're trying to get done and stay focused. It's not easy. You'll get distracted, but try to stay focused and dedicate a block of time
mm-hmm
that really makes a difference. You'll get so much more done if you dedicate a block of time and stick to it.
And you're absolutely right. You know, I talk to people and they will say to me, well, Kim, I want to be like the internet stars that I see. Instagram
mm-hmm
or any of these people we see on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll go, but Kim, they have 150,000 followers. I said, well, if you want to be naked, go right ahead.
Exactly.
But if you want to tell stories,
mm-hmm,
if you want to be in film, if you want to write books and things like that, you have to put in the work.
Yeah.
And I remember being really new before I had published a book and going to see different authors and listening to them tell their stories. And I had authors who would hammer me and say, listen, yeah, I know you go to work every day, but if you don't get up at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning and write for 3 hours before you go to work, you aren't serious. And I thought, but I need sleep, and one of the things that I always would tell people, you have to figure out what works for
exactly
you.
Exactly.
Because I have children now. And so sleep is a precious commodity that I don't
yeah
get enough of. Mm-hmm. However, if I want to get a book done, like you said, I got to block out time. Just
mm-hmm
like I have to block out time for my kids, I have to block
mm-hmm
out time for my husband. And I have to block out time for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do that, you can't put in the work
mm-hmm
to have a quality product.
Right.
You can't work for 3 days and think, okay, on the fourth day, it's done.
Right.
I was having a conversation with a gentleman who I'm working on a project with, writing a book for him. And I said, you know, it's probably going to take me about 6 to 8 months to do this. This is
mm-hmm
a big project. You've
mm-hmm
got a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but we're also going to have an editor who's going to go through my work
mm-hmm
to make sure that it's good. And he sort of looked at me like, but why do we need an editor? I said, because I need somebody to go behind me to make
oh,
sure
goodness
that the story that I'm telling, one, it makes sense, that it's in alignment. It's not just about checking for grammar or making sure that I used the correct words or it's spelled
mm-hmm
correctly. It's also about making sure that the content
exactly
matches. And I told him, I said, you know, I have seen self-published authors who I will willingly support, but I'm reading their story and I'm going, okay, she's in the kitchen, but on page two, she's in the basement. How'd she get to the basement? I don't understand. Now I'm confused. And then the pages are falling out of the book
mm-hmm
or
mm-hmm
the cover has her picture on it and it has
mm-hmm
nothing to do with the story.
Mm-hmm.
And this, and you're charging me $25 for a book that's 15 pages. And I'm going, okay, so what am I going to get out of this? So I would suggest to people, it's also working hard. It's also researching, going to class,
yes,
and remembering that whether it's film, books, plays, whatever it is, this is still a business.
It sure is.
And a hard lesson that I had to learn, and you helped me walk through that, and I have to thank you because you remember I was crying about my little website. And my website is my name, KimberlyBachelorDavis.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to get another website with your help. Thank you very much. KimBDavis.com. And I remember because it was like pulling teeth because you were like, Kim, let it go. And I was
mm-hmm
like, but I don't want to let it go. It's my name.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, Kim, it will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
I allowed somebody to host my website thinking that because they were a professional and I was contracting with them and I had a contract that
mm-hmm
they would honor and do what they were supposed to do. But what I didn't pay attention to was when the contract was over, if I wanted to let that person go, it was a waiting period mm-hmm. where they would say, okay, it might be 3 or 6 months before you get your domain back. Because we didn't end well, it took over a year mm-hmm. for him to let it go. And he kept paying for it. And I kept going on the different sites, GoDaddy.com, trying to figure out where my domain name was. And remember, at one point, my domain name was worth $300 mm-hmm. because he was still paying on mm-hmm. it. And then I called you one day and I said, he let it go. And I got it back and I was so happy. But I tell people, I said, you have to be careful of who you allow to do things with you and That's understand right. every detail.
Right.
It is a lot to do when you do not traditionally publish. And we'll talk about that real quick before mm-hmm. we get to the end of our show. But to self-publish, you are essentially responsible for everything. You're responsible for marketing, advertising, publicity, for ordering your book, distribution, all of that. So talk shows, if you're lucky, you can get that. If you can get in print and media, on television, whatever it is, mm-hmm. every book event. You got to book yourself, pay for it, make sure that you have everything that you need
That's right.
to be there in order to make it successful. But as a publisher, what would you say to someone who was struggling between self-publishing and publishing?
I would say you have to really assess what are your goals? What's your intention? If you just want to do a family memoir book or something just for the family and a limited number of copies. Mm-hmm. You may just want to do self-publishing mm-hmm. and, there are ways to work with what are called print brokers and just get that done and it's over. But if you want to do something that has mass appeal and you want to, really get into like a real high visibility thing, you mm-hmm. may want to do traditional, but I kind of caution people against traditional. I think self-publishing is really a viable way to go for a lot of people. It, mm-hmm. it depends on your temperament.
Mm-hmm.
If you're willing to put in some time
mm-hmm.
and work, then you can do it. But if you're a very hands-off person and you just want, then I would say traditional.
Right.
Right. But self-publishing is more lucrative. Mm-hmm. You have so much more control, right down to the cover, the book cover.
Yes, you do.
I've heard so many people tell me about how they had no control over the cover, of the cover they didn't want, or the editor did things to the manuscript that they didn't feel good about. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of pitfalls and you have to really know. So either way, I would say you need to talk to a publishing consultant. They can tell you
mm-hmm.
what,
mm-hmm.
What's a good idea, what's not, and help you cultivate a plan. It's all about having a plan, a strategy, and be willing to sit there and say, okay, the next really 3 years of my life is going to be devoted to
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. You're doing the writing or you're doing the development of it. You're doing the editing. You're finally getting it into print. But then that's just the beginning.
Right.
You have what's called the post-publication phase mm-hmm. that involves wars, that involves the marketing, mm-hmm. the ongoing marketing, that involves, and legal things too, like mm-hmm. what you're talking about, even with domains and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot involved, but it's an exciting, wonderful thing to do. It's a beautiful thing to do. You're contributing to the humanity, the record
yes.
of the human race in mm-hmm. terms of when you publish something, write and publish, create and do something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Which is why I write stories, because I want to tell stories
mm-hmm.
about people that look like me, people that I know, people
yes.
like us.
Yes.
And sometimes mm-hmm. I know when I look on the big screen and I see a character, I'm like, that's a great character. But what if we changed it? Or what if we added this? Or what mm-hmm. if we added that?
Mm-hmm.
Then it would be more representative of people that I know.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's an entirely another discussion.
That
is. But it's definitely. But yeah, I want to encourage people of color. We do need your authentic stories.
Absolutely.
You don't want, it's a famous writer that says it. You don't want somebody else telling your story.
That's right. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And we have so many people that do that. I know a few years ago when Spike Lee and Tyler Perry were going back and forth about mm-hmm. who, and I said, both of you tell stories from your end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, mm-hmm. those of us that are in the middle mm-hmm. who don't fit either extreme,
mm-hmm.
we sort of have to pick and choose. Okay, well, do I want to watch a Tyler Perry film? Do I want to watch a Spike Lee film? I particularly enjoy Spike Lee. There are some Tyler Perry movies that I do like, mm-hmm. not all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a choice. It's nothing against him. But I think that with the increase in Black directors mm-hmm. and writers, you get a more diverse perspective and point of view on what it means to be a Black American or African American person, or even just a person of color in the world.
That's true. That's true. But there's one extra step we need to start working on as people, creators of color, is ownership
yes.
of the material that we're creating,
because
there's only a fraction of actual producers and people of color that are able to really usher this story all the way through for you.
That's right.
There are mainstream studios and things. They're going to make changes. They're mm-hmm. not going to understand what you're trying to say. Mm-hmm. They can entirely change the message entirely.
Yes, they can. They absolutely can.
So you have to be careful with that too. So that's another discussion.
And so that brings up a great point. When we're talking about developing characters, or we're talking about putting together stories, mm-hmm. oftentimes in every writer's group that I've gone to or conference, it's always been said to me, yes, you want to create characters that are living and breathing and that people can identify with. Mm-hmm. However, sometimes when we're creating people of color, mm-hmm. they want you to leave it more generic because if they need to cast a white actor in that role, they can.
Exactly.
So for me, when I write my characters, I tend to describe my characters as folk of color, men dripping chocolate, different things like that. And a lot of writers or a lot of people will say, well, we might not be able to cast that person. And I'm like, well, you got Morris Chestnut, who's one of my favorites, who can do that. And then you have a whole slew of other actors. I love Denzel, but Denzel isn't the only one we have. We do have a multitude of actors. So when people say that, I'm often disappointed. And it's the same thing when we look at African American roles. Mm-hmm. I just saw, and I'm late, y'all, I just saw Widows with Viola mm-hmm. Davis. Mm-hmm. I thought she did a phenomenal job.
She's great in everything that
she is. But we do have other actors outside of Viola Davis.
Yes. It's like the studios only recognize like five names.
Right.
When
the story came out a few months ago, when they were talking about doing a Harriet Tubman back in the 90s, and they said, well, we were thinking Julia Roberts. And
I couldn't believe it.
You know what? Mm-hmm. But I could, because having gone to so many writers' conferences and listened to that, I said, somebody actually believes that. Somebody mm-hmm. believe that.
Yeah.
But, there's a time and a place for everything. And certain stories, it's the time. So Harriet, which I have not seen yet, but I've heard that it's awesome. I still want to see it. I'm glad that they cast a person that they cast in that role. And they said she's done a phenomenal job. It was interesting to me because we were talking about the show Friends and the whole controversy about which came first, Living Single or Friends.
Oh,
and I didn't really remember.
That's a good point. I don't recall.
I didn't recall, but apparently it was Living Single was first.
Oh, my goodness.
And Friends actually, because I think it's David Schwimmer came out and said they should have a Black version of Friends. And of course, Black Twitter clapped back and said they did. It was called Living Single. And I was like, oh, wow.
Goodness.
So, mm-hmm. you see things like that where you have shows mm-hmm. like, for example, Girlfriends versus
yes.
Sex and the City.
Yes.
I don't know which one
came first. Good point.
I know Sex and the City was based on a book series.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times we have movies, you'll have multiple movies. And the example I like to always use is Deep Impact and Armageddon.
Yes. Good example.
They had two scripts with sort of different perspectives on mm-hmm. the same story.
Yes.
It's an asteroid that's coming to destroy
yes.
the world.
Yes.
How do we handle it? One took one approach.
Mm-hmm.
The other one took a more action-oriented
right.
approach,
that's
where
right.
the other one was more character-driven and Deep Impact.
Yes.
But you still see the same thing.
Yes.
And in certain aspects, it just depends, because in Armageddon, you have Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm.
And in Deep Impact, you have Morgan Freeman and Taya Leone. And so
yes.
you get a chance to see the different interpretation of that. And so I always tell people, I said, every story, if you change actors, even if you just do a minor change,
mm-hmm.
you can totally and completely change the story
yes.
from what was originally seen to mm-hmm. something that is more representative of someone else.
Yes. Yes.
And sometimes I think as you said, as creators, we have to be able to capture that. Know that whenever you create something, that you should always register your work.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And you should always get a copyright for it. You want to talk a little bit about that, Heather?
Yeah, I mean, that's another long topic. But yeah, the basic thing is, though, yes, copyright is better. You can also register with the Writers Guild of America.
Yes.
But that's not as strong as a copyright, because copyright is what you will need proof of registration.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
If there's ever any dispute in court. And it's tricky too with submitting to studios and things like that. You have to make sure it's a definitely do your research on because even submitting it, you may be implicitly allowing them to have rights to your work.
Right.
And you won't be able to get it back. So, yeah.
Again, it's a business, and you have to understand how business works.
Yes.
And if you create something that's valuable and that can be sold, it can be taken.
That's right.
So we're not trying to scare you, but just understand and know it's a business, and be mindful of that and be wise about how you share your work and different things. So, Heather, you know, it's almost our time is almost up, but we got to talk a little bit more about what do you have coming up?
Oh, for me, I have a couple of fun things coming up. I mentioned this summer it will be premiering. The plans are to premiere the Solomon film.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, we've been working on it for a few years now in Detroit, and it's a beautiful, wonderful, exciting moment. The other big thing is the Flint Film Forum in June. That right now is scheduled for June 7th at the McCree Theater in Flint. So if you stay in touch with Kim, she'll have the information for you. If you want to know more about that, the public is really encouraged to come out, particularly creators of color. This is our time to tell our story the way we want to tell it.
Awesome. Let's talk a little bit about your creative studio at Tech Town.
Yeah.
Do you have open slots for people?
Yes, I actually do. And I'm available to talk with you about any type of creative project you're working on. Yeah, we're in Tech Town, very state-of-the-art building, and we would have a great, great time there. So to get in touch, Chick Kim will have information for you.
Awesome. If I am a writer and I'm looking for a local publisher, how would I get in touch with you? Or should I query you? And we can talk really quickly about what a query is and how that actually works.
Yeah. Query is always great because you kind of you're giving a little snapshot of what I can expect and what the story is about and what your goals and ideas are about it. And it introduces you as a writer. You can send that. You can send it to my email, AquariusPress@gmail.com.
Okay.
Kim will have the information also.
Absolutely.
But yes, a query is always appreciated first before. Yeah, that's another thing.
So explain to people what a query is, because some people might be listening. They might be like, well, what's a query?
It's an inquiry. It's a little brief letter that kind of introduces you and the work that you propose to share. You should have a little catchy line in there, maybe from the work.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big thing is you ask at the end, may I send you my manuscript?
Absolutely.
Publishers do not like receiving what are called unsolicited packages, which are like full manuscripts and books and artwork and you name it. People send a lot of interesting things.
I'm sure.
No, you approach first with the query and ask if we're interested. Then we tell you yes or no. If we're interested, we tell you how to send the material to us.
Absolutely. And you can actually go online. There's a site called AsianQuery.com, and you can actually pull agents based on what type of fiction, nonfiction, what your subgenre is in terms of writing, whether you're writing women's fiction, children's fiction, anything like that, and see who will actually accept work and then what their requirements are.
Yes.
All of them require a query letter, so you have to send that, and there's a format for that. You can Google that and find that. But do you have a website, Heather?
Yes. My website is www.auxmedia1@gmail.com.
Very good. Also, in April is National Poetry Month. Do you have something coming up in April?
I do. That's through my press, through Aquarius Press. Yes, thanks for asking about
You're
that.
You're welcome.
It's a National Poetry Month celebration for Detroit. This is the signature event that Detroit will be hosting in honor of National Poetry Month. It will be at the Scarab Club in Detroit. If you have not been there yet, it's one of the most beautiful places in the city where they host all kinds of cultural events. And we have several Detroit area poets that will be reading. And the great thing about it is it's free.
Awesome.
There is no excuse.
No excuse.
It's Friday, April 3rd.
Okay.
6 to 7:30 p.m.
And it's free.
And it's free.
And say that date again.
Friday, April 3rd. Let's show the world, what National Poetry Month is for our city. Other cities do things. Let's show them what we can do in Detroit.
Awesome. Awesome. And then you have something coming in the fall too, right?
Yes, in the fall, I plan to start an actual filming of a story that Kim has been well aware of it's been almost 10 years. It's called Dark River. It was a novel that I wrote about early Detroit when we had slavery in Michigan. A lot of people did not know that we had slavery in the North when Detroit was a French colony. And it was spurred by some facts that came out during the Detroit 300 celebrations. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The first known slave buried in the North was buried in Detroit.
Wow.
Yeah. And that just, like you, it sparked my imagination. Mm-hmm, and I did a lot of research and I learned so much, and I wanted to share it with everyone, and the book was well received. So mm-hmm. I'm getting ready to re-release the book, and then we're actually going to finally work on the actual a web series filming for it.
Wow, that's exciting. Okay, so a whole nother thing. Yes, web series. So this is like Netflix, Amazon.
Streaming types.
Streaming.
And just website streaming. And mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, truth be told, the theater industry is collapsing.
Wow.
We have to be realistic about it in terms of mainstream, big theaters. There's only a handful of blockbuster movies that mm-hmm. come out per year. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the year, there's not much going on. And the theaters are really suffering. So online, people are really more in tune with online broadcasts now.
Which is interesting. And I know that we have the coronavirus, which is mm-hmm. going around the world and causing all kinds of disruptions.
Yes.
And one of my favorite characters, James Bond, has a new movie.
Yes.
And it's been pushed back because of that. So that's absolutely. So it would be interesting to see how this pandemic plays out
in
terms of how business is done. Because I've heard some people say this may become a seasonal issue with this particular disease, mm-hmm. or they may be able to figure out a vaccine and be able to get through that. But then the question becomes, well, what's the next thing?
Right.
And are we going to get to a point where people at certain points of the year or times just won't be able to gather like that? Because they're talking about sporting events and all kinds of things.
Exactly. You have to be flexible. You have to be able to adapt.
And that is embracing your creativity. You got to be flexible and be able to adapt, because the market is always changing.
Yes.
10 years ago, we wouldn't have told you that self-publishing was the way to go. It was still about traditional publishing.
That's right.
Self-publishing has taken on a whole new role. And even in traditional publishing, it's difficult because now they want you to come with your own platform. That means you got to have followers on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. You need to be able to have your own ability to market your own book. Although you're going to them to help you do it.
And in a lot of cases, you have to have self-published a book first to show them to demonstrate the sales.
Exactly. And if you don't have the big sales for it, it takes years and years.
Yes.
Trust me, I'm still going through it. But I'm working on a project right now that an agent likes. So hopefully we're going to keep our fingers crossed on that and see if that does that. So just to give you guys an update on, for those of us that are listening in Detroit, I will be at the main library on March 21st from 12 to 5. For a pre-camp freedom event. It's a history literacy camp. We're going to be talking about the Underground Railroad, the importance of the Detroit River as the UNESCO World Heritage Site, and talking about how you have English, French, Native American, and African American history all interweaves together within the city of Detroit, and why there's so much history here and what we don't know about and what we don't understand and how it ties into the Underground Railroad and the importance of the Detroit River as an international body.
Yes.
You can go to my website at kimbdavis.com. You can reach me at 650-746-4427. You can find me on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. And yes, I try to be on everything. But the Bachelor Davis Group, just to give you a heads up, we produce large and small quality events that increase your brand identity. And I'm available for booking, speaking engagements, specifically on motherhood, writing, depression, and advocacy. You can also find me on Sunday mornings on the Detroit Praise Network on 99.9, 98.3, and 93.5. My books are available on Amazon and KimBDavis.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Kimberly Bachelor Davis Show. Thank you, Heather, for joining us today.
Thank you.
I can't wait till we do our next show. But I hope that you guys enjoyed the show today, and we will talk to you later. May God bless each and every one of you. Have an amazing week. Be magnificent.